Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening to another segment of Broadcast and Politics with Cisco Acosta, myself, and Luther Mays, my co-host, who should be joining us very soon. Tonight we have a fantastic show, and it has to do with money and the economy and the market under Donald Trump. So we will have Suzette Blackburn, who's an investment advisor for CapStar Financial in Austin, Texas. And she will give us a good idea of where to put that extra money that has come from the market and the economy under Donald Trump. Well, we'll get to Suzette in a couple of minutes, but I'd like to touch on this whole situation with Iran. The Iranian money that we, the $150 billion that was given out to the Iranians by the previous administration. Basically, that money was basically given with no conditions. Really, the conditions of supposedly what we were told was Iran was going to halt the whole nuclear buildup that they've been trying to build up for the past couple of years. Unfortunately, you cannot trust the Iranians. And I believe the previous administration was kind of ignorant to do that. And under President Trump, he took a very strong position, as many did in the Senate and in Congress, the Iranian regime, the totalitarian regime in Tehran. So I think we should be happy that the whole situation of Iran, they understand now that we mean business and the sanctions are going to go on again. And the economy, their economy is going to suffer because a lot of that money that was being used that they received from the previous administration has been used for terrorist situations. And what's going on right now in Israel, in the Gaza Strip, has a lot to do with a lot of the money that has been given to the Iranian regime. So you might like him or dislike President Trump. It's not important as far as I can see it. But the most important part that I think is people should realize is that we cannot be giving out free money when there's so much that we can do in our country. And we're giving, you know, money to a regime that is not an ally. And we just basically gave it to them so they can conduct terrorist acts all over the world. So we should give them credit for that. But I think the long-term implications of the Iranian, which we'll touch with Suzette Blackburn, is in regards to the oil prices. The oil prices have shot up. I mean, everywhere, price is out of control. I mean, oil prices are out of control. And we really, really need to make sure that there's not any rigging that's happening, especially with the Persian Gulf countries. And so we'll discuss the oil crisis that we're looking at, even though it's been very, very quiet in regards to what has been going on with the oil prices. It's been kept very low key in regards to what the media is reporting. But anyway, let me just get on and call our guest, Suzette Blackburn, and we'll see what we can learn from what Suzette is going to be discussing in regards to the economy under President Trump. And if you need to call in, the phone number is 646-915-8117. And this show is sponsored by Students for Better Future. Our producer, Doreen LaGuardia, does a great job in regards to dealing with a lot of issues on campuses, on college campuses, And also, she's involved, and I'm part of the board. I'm on the board of a group of that are we're fighting, and we're really pushing for to really dwell. I mean, investigate a lot of this human trafficking that's happening around the country. You know, the human trafficking is not just a global issue; it's also a national domestic issue. So, we'll be discussing that a bit more later. Okay, let's try and call her right now.
Hello, this is Suzette.
Suzette, how are you? Good evening.
Hi, how are you doing, Ruben?
All right. Welcome to the Broadcast in Politics, and we are so excited to have you. I've been getting a lot of our members, listeners, been sending me text messages, and so I have a list of questions for you, but before we go on with those questions, I'd like to touch on basically if you can give us a bit of what you have done and you know, your company and the role of you're playing in regards to advising individuals on how to invest.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, Ruben, by the way. I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to be on your show. It's really a neat thing what you're doing. It's really great. But my focus, I'm a Series 65 financial planner, which means I'm a fiduciary. And as a fiduciary, I chose my license very specifically. I wanted to be able to help people with no bias by being beholden to a firm. So I'm an independent advisor. What that means for the people that come to an independent firm is that I have an open architecture to handle their investments in any place. So Fidelity or Ed Jones or Merrill or any big box brokerage house, I would have access to without being beholden to that specific management team telling me what to sell you. It's just a better way to do business. It's being independent, and it gives people freedom of choice and freedom of pricing. So the focus that I have is on retirement planning and safe and steady returns. I'm really not a hot lot kind of girl. I really want to make sure that I do a real good income plan and make sure that everybody's got income for life. And then I shake the tree, so to speak, as you know, look at what are the pitfalls, what are the bad things that can happen, what if you got sick, what if your spouse died, what if the markets crash. What if there's an economic crisis or there's a government crisis or all the different various risks, international and domestic? So, I'm just kind of looking out for the people. So that's it.
Definitely. We have my co-host, Luther Mays, just joined in. Luther, we have Suzette Blackburn on the line.
Oh, how are you doing tonight?
Hi, Luther. How are you tonight?
Oh, I'm just a little late, just catching up what you guys are talking about. So the economy look like it's going to last, and all these investments are going to work, or what?
Say that again, I'm sorry.
I said, is the economy going to stay better, and all these investments going to be solid, or are you going to watch where you invest money?
Well, you know, one of the things that Ruben asked me to speak on was kind of the current volatility that we're in. And what I can speak to on that is that, oh gosh, I would say 70% of the stock market right now is run by algorithms. And so I've had the privilege of being able to sit on the Chicago Option Board and watch option trading. It's one of the few places in America that they still use hand signals to do options. And so with that said, when there's volatility, there's split-second trades being made, which is entirely different than how the market was traded in the early 2000s. And so, you know, one we suggest at our firm is to be very well diversified in all different kind of asset classes, not just the stock market. We think that, you know, real estate, some insurance products, having asset classes outside of the market, a little bit of gold, silver, precious metals, all different types of things are awfully, instead of just leaning on one structural, you can have a real flaw if everything's in the market.
Definitely, definitely. Do you see the current numbers, of the market under Donald Trump, comparing that with the market under President Obama? Where do you see, you've seen both. Is there a correlation between why the market boomed under Donald Trump and not under Obama?
Well, markets will always tell a story of confidence, okay? And for one thing, when Barack Obama was in office, we stimulated the market artificially, okay? I'm not biased towards Obama or Trump. I just want to tell you the facts. And when Obama was in office, we had a stimulus package, QE1, QE2, QE3, all the way to QE9 or something. So billions of dollars were being artificially pumped into the stock market and into treasuries, I should say, in a few select banks to artificially give confidence to the market so that we would have a holistic approach to them to economic growth. We had the slowest growth during Barack Obama in the economic, you know, the stock market went well, but I'm talking about true growth than it's pretty much ever been. I mean, it was back in the 60s. It reminded me a lot of the 60s. There was less job participation. We had artificial CPI that was calculated. I mean, it was just a lot of smoke and mirrors in the numbers. So now, contrastly, and again, this isn't a plus on Trump, a minus on Barack Obama, it's just facts, is that today there is a confidence that's not based on artificial pumping of billions into the market. You actually have people getting back to work, and you have regulations being torn off industry to where people can work, and if people are working, they're making money. If people are making money, they're spending money, they're putting it in the economy. That's the stimulus that you see, not artificial. So
right,
I would have to give a – I mean, that's just a fact. So now we have a market that's based on consumer spending and consumer investing rather than artificial pumping of government dollars.
So you're basically saying consumer confidence is up because Trump's in.
Say that again?
I said consumer confidence is up since Trump has got in. People are more confident.
But it's not, I'm not going to say it's because of Trump's in. It's because of the bills that have been passed, I believe. It's the things that have been done as a business. If you do not have profit, then you do not have raises. If you do not have raises, you don't have money spending, people spending money and going out and buying new cars, new televisions, new houses. That's what stimulates the market. It's not a man. It's the machine of the economy.
Yeah, if the people are spending money, the economy's rolling. If the people spend money and they don't get scared, the economy rolls. But when you don't have consumer confidence, this is what happens. Now that Trump's in, people are more energetic, more confident. I think this really is really help this. But
it does. And here's the thing. I'm always reading periodicals. I'm always reading, because if you watch the news, it's all slanted. Any news station, they're trying to sell advertising, okay?
Right.
And in my lifetime, the world has not ended once, okay? But every time you turn on the news, they're trying to keep you engaged so that you'll buy the car and the deodorant or whatever, okay? So whenever you read news, you need to find out who's sponsoring the news, because that's really what they're trying to do, is keep you engaged, correct? Wouldn't you agree with that?
Definitely. I totally agree with that.
So what you want to do is you want to go to periodical, you want to go to news sources that are factually based, And they're usually the most boring reads in the world. I mean, if you're really having trouble sleeping at night, these are great reads, okay? One of them is the Bayes Report. The Bayes Report is written by the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is comprised by the major banking systems all over the U.S. And so what they do is they get together. You know this. They call it Federal Reserve Committee meeting, and they decide on interest rates. But all we hear about on the news is, oh, my gosh, they're going to raise rates. So what I would encourage your listeners to do is actually read the data that they go by to make those decisions. And then you have the same information as the news sources minus all the hyperbole, okay? You get away from all that. So as a financial planner, I can tell you that we have the strongest economy that we've had. I mean, I'm reading in this report written by the Federal Reserve, and it's regional summaries all over the place. What's happening in Dallas, what's happening in San Francisco, what's happening in Atlanta, so forth and so on. And so whenever you read this report, what you get is the truth of spending and borrowing and lending. And to me, that's the guts and the machinery of our economic cycle. And so if you want to know what to invest in, you look at who's buying cars and houses. And so when I read that, what I see is that we have about another 2 to 3 years of solid growth. The reason why they raised interest rates, and this is the clue that you need to catch, the reason why they raise interest rates, they're trying to slow down the economic cycle that we're in. Do you understand? We are trying to expand it, and if we expand it too fast, then we will have hyperinflation. So if we slow it down with interest rate changes, then people aren't going to be quite quick to buy that new house, that new mansion, build on their lots, and so forth.
Right.
And so with that said, people don't need to be afraid of markets. They really don't. But you need to be very cautiously optimistic. And that's why diversification is the key, really is. We've got a great economic cycle. If you want to put it on Trump, fine. But I think it's the total. We were just kind of like a rubber band that was stretched really tight. And all of a sudden, Trump came along and it's like, wham, we were all ready to go. That's the way I see it.
Well, it's been like 18 years since the economy spurred like this. It's been what? The best economy since 2000, right?
Yes.
Well,
go ahead, Ruben.
I have to say, yeah, we should move away from the names, or individuals. But I have some notes here. Over 1 million jobs have been created. 1.7 million since he's taken over. Unemployment rate is down at 4.4. And then we have the youth for individuals that might not know the difference between the U4 and the U6 unemployment. The U6 is people who are looking for jobs or have given up on jobs. And
correct.
The unemployment rate for U4, that's down to 4.4. And the U6 is down to 0.6. Black unemployment, Hispanic unemployment, all down. GDP growth is 3.2.
Right.
Stock market. You're right that we shouldn't really put it on one individual, but this whole new economic cycle has started under him.
Well, I can tell you that, you know, we are still in tremendous amount of debt. Okay, so the bad news is we still have $20 trillion in debt.
Yes, that's
in January, the unemployment rate was down to 4.1 nationwide.
Right.
So something's working.
But I was giving you all these statistics is because I was going to bring you up to the next point, which is I think it's a concern of me, and I think it's a concern of a lot of individuals. This whole situation
with
the oil price. The oil prices.
Okay, what about oil prices?
Have shut up. I mean, everywhere, oil prices are just out of control. And my question to you, Suzette, Does it have to do with the situation with the sanctions that are going against?
The sanctions that are going in? Is that what you're asking me? Are you asking me if the oil's going up because of the sanctions on Iran?
Cisco, are you there? We lose
him? Are you there? I don't know.
We must have lost him, but we can continue talking. What he was asking, because of the sanctions, do you think that's why the oil prices went up? Personally, I don't believe that. What do you think?
Okay. Okay. The oil prices, you got to look at hard numbers. You guys are... Okay, oil prices go up because of supply and demand. It's bottom line. We are no longer we're no longer in an OPEC generated artificial up and down, which is beautiful. All right? If all of a sudden look at how they're fighting in Syria. It did not affect the oil prices in the United States. That ought to tell you something. Whenever other countries are fighting, if we were in the 80s like we were, or the 70s, and Syria's they're blowing each other up, our oil prices would have gone through the roof. Got it?
Right.
So
we are
today, and listen to me, we are today more independent in energy than we have ever been. It has nothing to do with sanctions, has nothing to do with any of all that. It has to do with supply and demand. And so right now, you've got more technology being generating oil at a cheaper way, and so oil and gas is something that it's going to be a new day. I mean, it's kind of the wild west with technology being able to go and drill very inexpensive wells. They're going deeper now into, there's a Barnett Shale in Texas, and they're going, that was the deepest well production ever, and they're able to go, I think I read it was like 5,000. Anyway, it's a long way. I don't want to act like I know a lot about that. But what I do know is technology is driving that industry, and it's going up because the supply is needed. Again, we're growing, and we need more energy. They're going to have to produce more.
Definitely, definitely. So I definitely agree with you on that. But, again, that's something that is a concern. I believe a lot of our listeners are basically wanting me to touch on that subject, Suzette. Another one that I just got is what do you see for the baby boomers in regards to what would you recommend? I know you can't go, you would have to sit with the individual. Each individual would be different, but what would be something that you could recommend for baby boomers who are maybe 10 years or more for retirement? What would you recommend in regards to preparing for retirement?
Okay, so let me understand your question. If somebody's within 10 years of retiring, what do I recommend? That's a pretty broad question. What specifically are you asking me? If somebody's within 10 years of retiring, are you talking about how much money should they have? What are you asking me?
Basically, the question is what type of retirement investment should they be having?
Okay, all right, I understand. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a bigger question than okay, I'm going to back up a little bit. It's a bigger question than what kind of investment should they have. It's more if somebody is within 10 years of retiring, let's back up, okay? We need to know, as a retirement, baby boomer, what am I spending every month? What are my bills that I want? What do I? You got to dream a little bit. You need to start thinking in terms of what do I want my lifestyle to look like when I retire in 10 years? And you have a written plan. That's where somebody like me would come into play.
Exactly.
And you have a written plan of, am I going to spend $10,000 a year on travel? Am I going to spend $5,000 a year on travel?
Right.
How many times am I going to buy a car? Am I going to own my home with no mortgage? Am I going to still have a mortgage? Do I want to pay for kids' education? All those questions. And then we need to add, you know, mortgage, light bill, groceries, clothing, okay, all the stuff that you regularly pay for. Then, you know what, a lot of people miss this. You've got to add about 2.5% inflation for the next 30 years to that number.
Okay.
And that's where it gets a little hairy. So after that math, it's just math. That's all it is, just math. You do the math, and you figure out what it is that you want to spend in 10 years, and then you match your resources, okay? And everybody does it backwards. They go, oh, my God, I need $1 million or $2 million or $5 million or half a million. That's the wrong question. The first question that needs to be asked is, what do I want to be spending? Add the 2.5% inflation, and then we back into, am I saving enough or am I not saving enough? Okay?
Right.
Now, that's if we have a perfect world. We never have a market crash. We never have an illness. We never have a spouse that dies. I mean, I just want to start with a baseline. And then once you've built that and you've got your expenses and your resources all mapped out, then you have to shake it. Now, what am I talking about? Shaking it means that you literally go, okay, can my assets handle a 25, 30% downturn with an income source from those assets? Ooh, okay. How about my spouse dies and I lose half of my Social Security? Ooh, can I handle that? What if one of us gets sick and we've got $300,000 or $400,000 worth of bills over a 4-year period, which is very likely? I mean, 2 out of 3 of us are going to have some form of long-term care by the time we reach 78 years old. Those are pretty good odds. I don't know about you, but those are, I'm planning for that, okay? So you have to make sure you've appropriated those monies either in a policy, you got life insurance to cover the long-term care issue, or Social Security discrepancy if somebody dies early. All that needs to be addressed in exactly when you're saying, 10 years before you retire.
Right.
Okay, I'm 52. I've got all those pieces set up. I'm not going to retire until I'm probably 67, but you've got to start at some point and know that you've got enough assets and enough income. Income is the deal. You know how in real estate they say location, location, location? Well, retirement is income, income, income. It's not big buckets of money, because big buckets of money can go away in the stock market crash, boom, just like that. You guys know that.
Yes.
So it's having income sources, real estate, REITs, dividend-paying stock, income-producing, you know, different fixed income accounts, annuities, all these different things need to be set up for people within that 10-year period, so that by the time you get there, you've got different income sources. That way, if something fails, you've got other things working. Does that help?
That seems to answer the question. Good answer to the question. Another question in regards to let me see, what was it? In regards to not retirement, but healthcare. Is there
healthcare?
Believe,
okay, what do you want to know?
Do you prefer FSAs or as an investment tool for healthcare, or FSA, and the other one is
an HSA or an FSA? Is that what you're talking about?
HSA, and or FSA. Which one would be a better investment tool for
discussion.
Saving?
This is, yeah, it's a really good discussion, Ruben. I'm glad you brought this up. FSAs are, I mean, those are ones that are use it every year. That you put a little bit of money into an account. Mm-hmm. Now, the beauty of both of these accounts, your listeners need to realize, this is very coveted dollars because it's pre-tax. So if you're in a 20% tax bracket, you put $100 into that. Instead of a net $80, you actually have the full $100 that you can spend. Are you guys with me? So it's a coveted, it's a taxed advantage plan. Now, the problem with an FSA is that you have to use those dollars every single year. You cannot carry those over year after year after year. So the HSA, a health savings account, is a much better option. And a couple can actually front load that. If you haven't already started one, you can front load that with about $6,500 that is absolutely tax-free, and it comes right off your balance sheet of taxes when you set up an HSA. Now, if you don't need the money and you're healthy and you don't need it for a copay or vitamins or whatever, then guess what? You can use it the following year or the following year. Or I mean, I literally have clients that we set up HSAs, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, and they've got $30,000-$40,000 sitting there, and you take that out tax-free. So think of this. You put money away pre-tax, it grows tax-free, and you withdraw it tax-free. It's an amazing account. I wish we could put more into it. That would be, if I was in government and I could call, pick up the phone and call Trump, I'd say, sign an executive order that we can put $10,000, $15,000 a year in our HSA. That's what I would do.
Do
you have his number? Do you have the hotline number?
We'll get in touch with Roger Stone. Roger Stone has his number. He's a friend.
Okay, you got it, Luther. I need it.
So said, I know that you have another
I do. I got to get out of here. But this is awesome, you guys. This is great, and I want to really say how much I appreciate you letting me be on the show.
Definitely. But before you go, I'd like for you to give your website and regards.
Hey, Ruben, thanks again. This is wonderful. And thank you to everybody that's listening. My website is capstarfinancial.com, capstarfinancial.com. Lots of things on there. I've got a whole thing I did with KVU News. A lot of topics are covered. I've been doing radio for the last 5.5 years. All my radio shows are on there, and they're topical. If you want to listen to any of the topics that we've talked about, scroll down their names and feel free to call me if you've got any questions. And capstarfinancial.com.
I appreciate you coming on, and good luck, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you, Ruben. God bless.
Okay, God bless. Well, that was Suzette Blackburn. Suzette Blackburn, a fantastic guest, informed us in regards to the economy and financial investments. Luther, while we're on the line.
Yes, I'm here.
So I brought up initially in regards to this whole Iran situation, President Trump basically imposing sanctions against the Iranian regime out of Tehran. What's your take on it?
Now, I don't know if she's right about this oil situation, you know. It seems like every time we try to do something, they jack the oil prices up. So.
Yes. I'm very concerned about the oil situation around the country, and it's basically, I think it has a lot to do with the situation in the Gulf, especially with the Iranians.
You know what the problem is? If the governor the president opened the oil reserves up to bring gas prices down, it wouldn't happen because the oil will go to the highest bidder. The oil would probably end up in Britain or something. So that don't work either. So that's something I wish I knew more about.
Well, I think that this whole situation with the oil prices, it happens every year. It happens with every administration. As we're gearing towards summer, the summer season, prices tend to go up all the time. Haven't you noticed? It definitely is.
I've noticed that happening. That happens, it seems like, every time, like you just said.
Every summer. Every summer, it doesn't matter if it's a Republican or a Democrat or any different party, it always happens. I think the solution, like you said, I agree with you, is basically to start using some of our reserves, oil reserves that we have.
Well, like I just said,
Yes,
but
exactly.
I just said every time they open up the reserve to bring the gas prices down, they sell it to the highest bidder, and the oil leaves this country, and it goes somewhere else. And if you notice, every time the gas goes up in the spring, and when the economy started to boom, they jacked the gas prices up, it seems like. So I ain't so sure. What do you think of that?
Well, I think in this situation, I think that there is a vendetta against Donald Trump, especially in the Middle East, because of his, you know, very, very stringent, which is understandable, and I agree with him, stringent immigration policies. I think the Gulf countries have taken the position that they're going to do everything to undermine the current economic situation in the United States. But in reality, they don't realize that they're also hurting themselves, and so it's going to backfire on them, you know. But in my mind, I believe that they're doing it intentionally to undermine the economy, the U.S. economy. But let's touch on something else that really has been bugging me for a while, and we haven't had a discussion, Luther. This whole situation with the Russian dossier and Russian probe that really we spent on Robert Mueller and his 8,000 lawyers in Washington, D.C. Have basically spent over $8 million already investigating collusion under the supposedly with the 2016 election. What do you think about this whole Russian collusion?
It's a big joke. I think it's just a reason to extract your president from doing his job. They're just not. You know, this is amazing. People should be seeing right through this. What do you think?
Well, my feeling is that the real collusion that happened with the Russians was with Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. And you can tell, I still remember that video where President Obama and President Medved, who was the current president before Vladimir Putin, where he said to President Medved, listen, if I win the election in 2012, we're going to be very flexible with you guys. Okay, that's number one. So that's collusion right there. I mean, you can't. Number two, the fact that these Russian oligarchs were basically donating, investing money to the Clinton Foundation in exchange for what? We sold uranium to the Russians. That's another form of collusion. So in my analysis of this whole Russian collusion is that Robert Mueller was put there to basically block this whole investigation into the actual culprits of who were really into the Russian police. That's my feeling. I don't know. What's your take?
Yeah, he was put there to cover it up and put the heat on President Trump. That's exactly what they're doing to cover it up because they're the ones working with the Russians. They're the ones selling the uranium to the Russians. That's the problem here. But they got. But if you listen to CNN, they tell you the exact opposite. I think people are starting to realize what's going on. So hopefully, people like me and you will learn.
Well, I think there is a growing audience around the country and even around the world that is understanding that. You know, there's a heavy, very large propaganda that has been pushed by individuals in the government that basically want to make this Russian collusion be real. And I tell everyone that I get a chance to speak to that if they really have something some really, really good information on Trump that he was really involved with collusion, they would have put it out there already. The man would have been
impeached already.
I mean, Why? There's no reason for them to be waiting. You know, someone told me, well, they're waiting. Waiting for what? If they have it, hey, they want to get rid of this guy. They want to get rid of Donald Trump. If I had the information to get rid of Donald Trump, I would put it out there and bring it out and impeach him and kick him out and put someone else, get someone else. But they don't have.
They're just trying to distract from what they're the guilty party, but that's their plan.
Exactly.
Distract from the truth.
Yes. That's exactly true. Moving on to the next topic, what's your take on and how do you see the midterm election, especially in your home state of the great state of Michigan?
The midterm election is coming up. How's it
the
look?
Midterm election? Yeah. The midterm election. First of all, the first part of the question is, what do you think about the midterm election? And the second part is, how do you see the situation in Michigan? Because you have a very critical governor's race in the state of Michigan.
I don't see the guy from Indian Women. People here, there's people right around me right now. People here are realizing what's going on here.
Trend egg,
he's not going to win that. And you see the Republicans taking over the state.
Okay. So basically, based on your observation and dealing with a lot of individuals in the state of Michigan, you feel that the current candidate, Muslim candidate for the governorship in the state of Michigan, will not win.
Yeah, he will not win.
Okay. Now, the other part of the question is, overall, how do you see the midterm elections?
Not going too well for the Liberal Democrats, because the people in the cities have realized they've been being played for their vote. And, you know, the jobs are up, but the people are still working for just above minimum wage here. So this county here, Oakland County, where I'm at, is the leader of the world order. This county here is probably where this revolution has started, if it ever does. I hate to say it,
right.
They've got show cause hearings on people. People used to do the time if they didn't have the money. Well, now you
right.
do the time, you get out, and if you don't pay the fines, and you don't show up for the show cause hearing, you go back to jail.
Yeah, go back on the show cause.
And then, on top of that, they have responsibility fees. If you get a drunk driver, the state even charges. They're double dipping. The people
are tired.
And the Republicans, the governor, is supposed to extend the rest of it in October. We'll see what happens. But Michigan is really, really waking up. And we need you. Because this is a serious problem. And it starts right here where I work. I'm driving. Not that one driving
Luther.
Right now, by the way.
Yeah, Luther.
Yeah, I hear you.
Detroit, the city of Detroit. We're going to focus on your state of Michigan. The city of Detroit. Is it true that it's coming back as a major city? There a lot of investments in the city of Detroit. Is that true?
Yeah, it's coming back. What happened to this state? It was an automotive state, but now it's this is the high tech state. You look at a lot of high-tech jobs, a lot of them here in Michigan.
Okay.
This is the difference here.
Cool.
But, yeah, the economy's coming back. But it's still – the unemployment rate's still above the national level by almost a full percent. It ain't 4.1
right.
here. I think it's 4.9 here. But the other thing is we're overpopulated in here, too. There's too many people in here in the southeastern part of Michigan, the Detroit area.
So the urban, you feel that there is a reawakening of the urban community within the city of Detroit.
Yes, sure is.
And how about in the rest of the state? Because we had that situation in Flint with the water issue. That basically the water issue, is that still a problem in Flint?
Yeah, that problem in Flint hasn't been fixed. They say they have, but it hasn't been fixed. The other problem with the Flint dirty water crisis, they're blaming Governor Engler. I mean, not Engler, but the governor, Republican governor we got here now. But we all
Rick
know.
Rick Snyder.
Snyder. They're blaming Rick Snyder, but we all know this has come right from Washington. And if you want to test all the city water in New York and Chicago, don't be surprised to see about it. Let's be realistic about this.
Right.
I don't even drink city water. I drink bottled water, and I hate to take a shower because I hate to think about what's in it.
Right. Now, in regards to the midterm election, back to them because I think it's very important. Where do you see Michigan in reelecting a Republican governor and Republican congressman?
I'd pretty much say slam dunk.
Slam dunk.
You know, we got two senators, both Democratic senators here. I see one of them being a Republican.
Okay. So you see a changeover.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because the economy's better, people are going to go. What's going on? What's going good?
Okay. And the next question, staying within the great state of Michigan, the African-American community, where do you see? Because I know we've had this conversation. You believe that they're basically changing and realizing that things are changing and they need to change, right?
Well, they are changing. I'm working with Afro-American people. They just went in the store. I'm in a vehicle right now. One of them is retired from General Motors at 30 and out. The older black people Afro-American people have got smarter. The younger kids are on this internet. They're learning. I'd say I wouldn't surprise. You know, the Democrats are basically finished for a long time. The African-American people have realized they've been being played for their vote. Like after the Great Depression, they fed everybody, but they kept giving them a handout, the liberals, because they wanted their vote. So they've kept them enslaved. These people are tired. The people I'm around, they've worked for a living, and they don't want to see their grandchildren living off a handout.
Right.
You know, this is really, Hillary Clinton and them have really made some huge mistakes. They've been exposed on the black net. People are seeing the black net, and they don't believe. And another thing about African-American people, they don't trust their government to begin with. Never did.
Right. No. I'm with you on that. Now, how do they feel about illegal immigration? Since you interact a lot with the African American community.
Well, it don't help them get jobs if they're coming in here illegally.
Yeah.
It's
no, I agree.
Them out of jobs too. You know.
Yeah.
We've got it all wrong. When we used to bring out green cards and let the Mexican people in, they come here to live in America, to make a life in America. You know, now they're not letting the good people in, they're letting the bad people in. But now that Trump's closed the border, that should help a lot too. But yeah, the Afro-American people are tired of not having a job. When your cities are 20-30% unemployment rates, I think after a while you start realizing you're being played.
Yeah, no, I agree.
You know,
I agree totally. You know, I another thing that I just was really, really bugging me. It's been bugging me for a while. When this whole situation with sanctuary cities started happening, and I kept telling individuals, especially some of our listeners, that sanctuary cities came into existence because the federal government under under Obama started giving out federal funds to make these cities sanctuary cities. But if that money is taken away, those cities will not be sanctuary cities. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. 100% agree with you on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because we have cities, there's a revolt happening in California with cities saying we're not going to be part of the sanctuary cities. We're basically going to allow ICE to come here. In your observation, do you feel that that's going to start ricocheting, having a ripple effect throughout the whole country?
Absolutely. Put a stop. You know, with that knowing amount of funding this, it's gonna stop this.
Exactly.
Trump was the best thing that ever happened to this country. Absolute best thing that ever happened. He's starting to show economy's up. Economy's the best it's been in 18 years. But like I said, there's jobs, but they're not good prevailing wage jobs. But we'll see.
Well,
it's a start. We're going in the right direction at least.
Yeah. See, I have to disagree with you on that sense. I think the best way of helping lower income family individuals is to reduce taxes. Okay? If you look at an individual who's making minimum wage, he's paying all these taxes. To help that low income, my idea, if I was running the show, is these individuals will get tax breaks. You'll see, they'll be able to keep more money in their pocket. Okay?
Well,
what's the benefit?
Corporation
what's
of this
the
country
benefit?
Is tax breaks.
Right, but what's the benefit? You know, we have all these cities that want to raise wages. They want to raise wages. Okay, what's the purpose? What's the use of raising the wages from $10 to $16 when you're going to be taxed more? That is the only reason.
Well,
the government,
that's too much. That's way too much. I agree with you on that. You might want to raise minimum wage, but you can't just raise it $5 an hour.
We have cities like Seattle. We have cities, states like California and other cities in other parts of the country that are raising the wages. But they believe, the city local governments, these left-wing governments, believe that by raising the wages, it's going to help the individuals. Not if you're going to be taxing them at a higher level. You know, that's where I have a problem with that. My solution is lower the tax break. I mean, give them a tax break for lower income individuals. In this way, you will have, they will be able to keep more.
He will buy you one too. And you want
I agree with you on that. I totally agree with you on that. Tax breaks is the best one. Absolutely.
The reason is because they will actually see it on their paycheck. You know, instead of taking these FICA, state, you know, all these taxes that they can basically, these individuals will be better off and have more money to spend and to live, because a lot of these individuals are struggling to just, you know, live, because what they're making is not enough. So,
since Donald's been in, you can claim too. That's definitely helping the lower, the poorer people, because they're bringing home more in their paycheck. And I'm talking probably $20 more a week since Trump come in. You know, that helps.
It's
like the corporations left the country. If you don't give them tax breaks, they're going to leave. Your corporations are not going to stay if you don't give them tax breaks. And that's exactly what happened here in Pontiac, Michigan. They didn't want to give tax breaks to the GM and the Big Three, and they said, okay, we're out of here. And then they go overseas and for third world labor. Then they bring the money back into the country without going through the tax base, fading out the middle class. So if you're going to allow corporations, you got to keep the corporations here. And then the ones bringing their money back in, it's got to go back to the tax base, or we're going to lose our tax base. The problem we got in this country is over 50% of the people in this country don't work. How can you keep your checks and balances even when you're paying out more money than you're collecting in taxes? You agree with me on that, Ruben?
I totally agree. I mean, regulations is another part of it, Luther. The more regulations are imposed, people don't really understand that the companies are going to pass that extra charge, extra cost back to the consumer. They're not going to eat it. They're not going to eat that.
Let's talk about pollution.
Yeah.
Well, all these regulations on the like Dow, it's just cheaper for them to dump this stuff illegally because the fines are cheaper than that's why they do that. So,
right.
It's absolutely,
we have a couple more minutes. Is there something that you wanna that has been bugging you that you wanna discuss in the last couple minutes? I've been the one
oil,
who's been
the oil prices okay. Right now. Well, we were just talking about a little earlier. I know everything's burned, but I just don't buy into that the prices are high because of we need more. We're, this country's full of oil, but we're tied into OPEC here. It's like I said, when we open up our reserves, it don't lower the prices because it may go to another country to hire better.
Well, I believe ever since I was a kid, I've always believed that the problem with oil prices has always been OPEC. You know, and for individuals out there who don't know what OPEC is, OPEC is the controlling force that sets the price of oil prices around the world. And
yeah.
Most of the countries are in the Middle East.
Right.
So I totally agree with you.
Needs to be fixed.
Yeah, no.
We have enough oil to take care of our own country. I've always said we need to break away from OPEC.
And
that's what I say, but people come after every kind of ever said that. But, you know, it's just like the pipeline they put through from Canada through into this country. We're putting this pipeline in, but the senator's already passed it to where these trucker Trump, and he's still shipped this run this oil for their trucks. But we're putting the pipeline in. The pipeline's put in to save us money, you know?
People
that run this country put us in this position.
Well, I think it has to do with vested interests with certain individuals, like the Warren Buffett of the world, who have they own a lot of the track. The area where the tar sand, for anyone who doesn't know, tar sand is basically produced in Canada, in central Canada. And that basically would reduce the price of oil, but it needs to be transported from Canada to the United States. And I think Buffett has a certain segment of that transportation path that doesn't allow that to happen. So, yes, you're right.
There's your problem right there.
Yeah, it's basically there's a lot of obstacles that have been put in the way because who benefits from higher price of oil? The oil producing countries.
The ones, and the power that's caused the problem.
Yes, I mean, especially Saudi Arabia is a very influential part of OPEC. They definitely control a lot of what. All right, Luther.
Well, they got too much power. Saudi Arabia's got too much power. OPEC needs to be fixed, and we need to break off. This has been a great night, Cisco, and love to do this again. Keep
we'll
in touch
soon.
And let me know what's going on, okay? God bless the United States and this whole world. God bless you, too. Good night.
God bless, Luther. That was Luther Mays, my co-host. I want to say that it was a great show tonight. We really learned a lot about the current economic situation from Suzette Blackburn. A little... conversation I just had with my co-host Luther Mays, and I think we have a good idea of where the economy is at today. And hey, we have Memorial Day coming up this weekend. How time flies! The summer is here, then July 4th, and then Labor Day. So it's definitely the economy and the country, and we're blessed. We are blessed. And again, once again, if you have time, please go to Students for Better Future and donate anything as possible. We definitely do a lot of work to try and inform everyone. Thank you and have a great day.